All right, I'd like to call this meeting to order at 6:29 and a half. Roll call.
Trustee Barry.
Here.
DeCarl.
Here.
DeSmit.
Here.
Sias here. Olson.
Here.
Boyer.
Here.
Daney.
Here. Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have any town hall?
Any town hall? Nope.
Nope. Hearing none. Okay, an update on our library's investments.
Very good. John Felduto from Sawyer Felduto here. I'm going to sit because I want to juggle my materials here real quick, if that's
sure.
Okay. I did give everybody on the board a copy of our report. I will run through everything quickly, and then, of course, as we always do, any questions are certainly welcome. If we turn to page 3 of 16, and this will be the general fund, I'll run through this as I usually do, but again, anything else you'd like to visit about. If you look in the top portion there under the green bold bar, we've got a total value as of February 29th of $3,638,000. And you can see the allocation between Treasury, CDs, agencies, etc., right above that. You have a little bit in money market as well. We've got the cash flow review, second section down, if you will, and we go all the way to the right-hand side. We've got the inception to date, which at this point is about 14 months when you figure in we started right at the beginning of 2023. We started with a beginning value, of course, of zero. We had $3.5 million come in initial deposits, if you will. During the period, we've had $10,000 of appreciation. We've also had income of $115,000. And we've got accrued income of a positive $13,514, meaning we've got some interest we haven't received yet that we'll be getting along the way. We've got an ending value of $3.638 million. So the investment gain since the start is $138,000. We also provide the projected income, just gives us a sense of kind of the income stream of the portfolio. And then we always also at the bottom put the projected income and maturities. And that's beneficial so that if during our conversation tonight you say, hey, John, we might need a little bit of this money, we know exactly what we have coming due and when in terms of dollar flow or cash flow. We flip one page to page 4 of 16. This breaks down on a quarter by quarter basis the growth of the portfolio. So if you start at the bottom there, you see the since inception total all the way to the right, again, that $138,000 of gain that we've had. You can see quarter by quarter where that all fell. So long story short, fairly pro rata, if you will, not a lot of peaks and valleys. And also note that you did add money along the way, and that's shown in the inflows column. So you started with $1 million initially, first quarter of 23, another million, and then a couple of other tranches that hit in the second, third, and fourth quarters. Look at the bond analysis, page 5. You can see the maturity in terms of the bar chart there. Everything comes due in 24 or 25, so nothing very long in the portfolio. And you can see the breakdown of the types of securities that we own. You've got the Treasury notes comprising almost 23%, 45% in CDs, 17% in agencies, 13% in callable agencies, and a little bit in tax and municipal. You see the yield characteristics and the duration to the right of that. A current yield to market about 5%, which is right in line with where interest rates are these days. We've got the holdings on page 6, 7, and carries over into totals on page 8. I won't go through each of those in a lot of detail, but you see we do have diversification. In particular, on page 6, lower half there, you've got the CDs that we own. Note that, of course, that nothing's close to that $250,000 FDIC limit. We always want to make sure we're aware of that. And then you've also got the characteristics of the portfolio, meaning the current yield, yield to maturity, and the annual income on a security by security basis. If we flip to page 9, we've got the transaction ledger, and these are the same reports that we do email out on a monthly basis, so we always have the month's worth of transactions, if you will. Nothing out of the ordinary here, of course, just buying things as cash prevails. Allows us to, and then we've got some sales which are typically going to be maturities. So for example, on February 20th, you see that Federal Home Loan Bank security did mature, $50,000, and of course we did put that back to work with some other money above that later in the month. We've got the capital needs fund next. I won't go through this in quite as much detail. I'll just give you the summary of the highlights. Page 10, tells us the market value is $787,000, almost $788,000 as of the end of the month. Since inception, this portfolio in the middle of the page on the right is up $37,986. Projected income, projected income and maturities. And then you've got that same chart on page 11 that shows the cash flows in and out. In this case, it was just one inflow of $750,000, nothing in or out since then. And you can see the quarter by quarter gain in the portfolio as well. Got the same chart on page 12 that documents the maturity schedule, if you will, and the varying characteristics of the types of securities that we own on the bottom half of page 12. And then we've got the individual securities on page 13 and 14, followed by the transaction list again on page 15. And then we've got our chart at the end on page 16. A couple of different things that we show there. And one is, if you look at the second chart on the page, the U.S. Treasury yield curve, you can see that for the most part, interest rates have held steady on the short end. So if you look, the blue and red lines from January to end of February were right in line. Once you get out past about 6 months, note that interest rates actually went up a little bit from January to February. And what happens when you have increase in interest rates, of course, is you have a little bit of depreciation in the value, but that doesn't mean it changes your maturity value. That all stays the same. It's just what the current value is if you had to sell it on the last day of the month. And you can see the chart on the third chart on the page highlights the interest rate environment. Note the money market fund as of month end was at 4.91%. 3 month, whether it's T-bills, CDs, represent the best value at this point. So very short term, it's actually paying quite a bit more than a little bit longer term, which is what we call the inverted yield curve. So again, we want to stay a little bit conservative, keep it short, take advantage of those high rates. We've got some securities out a little bit longer because if rates start to fall, we'd like to keep some of those higher interest rates for a little bit longer period of time as well. So it's a balancing act. And that hopefully is about 5, 6, 7 minutes. Hopefully that was okay. I'd be glad to answer any questions that I can.
May I, before you, I just have one quick question. Sure. For my own clarification, on page 5.
Page 5, yeah, give me a second. All right.
That 13.4 callable, explain that to me.
Sure, so bonds, I'll show you an example of that. Let me just see if the description is here that I can find easily. Yep, so let's go to page 7 of 16. And essentially, right in the middle of the page, you see U.S. government agency callable.
Mm-hmm.
And what this means is that the issuing agency, in this case, the Federal Home Loan Bank, the security has a maturity date of April 25th of 2025. But if they decide for whatever reason they want to call that money back, in other words, cancel the investment, if you will, give you your principal back, they can do that on April 25th of 2024, so about a year early. So the reason they put callable calls in place on securities is if interest rates were to bounce around quite a bit, it may be advantageous for them to call that security early. Or they have the option to let it go until maturity, either way. So for that call option, usually the investor, the library, gets a higher yield than they would if it was just a straight bond that matured in 25. So we always look for a call feature for a little bit of the portfolio, gives you a little bit higher yield, and doesn't really increase your risk too much.
Thank you, appreciate that. Trustee Olson.
A couple quick questions. In your projected income, whether it's the long-term or the short-term grouping, are you factoring in some sort of return on the liquid portion of the cash? Or of the investments?
So the, for example, if I look at page 3 of 16, under projected income, I do see each of the types of bonds that we own. In addition to that is cash equivalent, which is the money market. And that simply projects the expected income if the value of that money market stays the same as it is as of the printing of the report. So it does include a factor for quote-unquote cash or securities that are held currently.
Okay, I guess I'm a little confused. If we have funds that are basically liquid, if we needed it tomorrow, we could get it if we let you know today.
Right.
Those funds are being recorded in your projection as income period by period. Because if we look at the projection, say for the second period of the current year, or the forecasted second, third quarter.
Third quarter, okay.
There's a decrease. Why would we have a decrease in that amount?
Yeah, so look at a good, easy way to see that would be, you see the taxable municipal reference on the sheet. There's an interest payment that comes in during the second quarter and during the fourth quarter, because those bonds and most bonds pay interest every 6 months. So really it's just the timing of the interest payments being made. So for example, the taxable municipal bond or bonds that we own don't have a date of payment for interest during the third quarter. And that's probably a similar story with several of the securities that are here. It's just the timing of the interest. It doesn't change any of the annual yield, if you will.
Okay, so if we looked at your monthly statements, not and ignored this, aren't we reflecting an accrued value in terms of increases month to month?
On the Schwab statement, there's an accrued income number. Yes.
So this projection is really based on cash flow.
This projected income chart right here is strictly projected cash flow of the income coming in on the portfolio. Yes.
Okay.
It's when the dollars actually hit the doorstep versus being accrued.
Right. The reason for my question is, starting July 1, which will be our new fiscal year, from a budgetary standpoint, we're going to have a reasonable forecast in terms of our investment return. So we can't really use those numbers, is what I'm suggesting.
Yeah, what we would typically utilize is, again, it's a little bit of back of the napkin math, because you don't know for sure where interest rates are going to be throughout your whole budgetary year.
Understood, but
yeah.
let's assume that over the course of that period of time, it looks like from the forecast in the back that it's not unreasonable to assume at least a 4% return average. On our investment.
I would say based on where interest rates are today, a 4% yield would make sense.
Yeah. So,
but I'm not saying that's right or wrong, depending on cash flow and that kind of thing as well. Part of that depends on how long the money will be there. If it's going to be there the whole year, if you're going to add to it, that type of thing.
Right.
To just say 4% of a number.
Understood.
Yeah.
Understood. This year, when we budgeted, we unfortunately budgeted way low, and so we're already at, after 8 months, the point at which we projected the whole year, and I don't want to see us do that again in 24-25. So I just want to understand this before we get to that point in the budget process.
Yeah, that would certainly be a discussion for the group. I mean, you know, one of the things that we have these discussions fairly regularly with our fire district and other municipal type entities that we manage money for, oftentimes the thought is we'd rather under budget the income number a little bit so that we don't end up with not enough money to pay our bills based on we are expecting more. At the same token, you don't want to assume a 1% yield probably either. You know, it just isn't fair to everybody. But again, usually our experience has been it's better to be a little conservative. You know, just like if you're saving to pay for college, you don't want to cut it to the penny. You'd rather have a little bit more than you need. Same thing here, but that's up to you guys in terms of how you handle your budgets.
Thank you. That's my question.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
I'll just say thank you for coming out and speaking to us. I think this is quite a gesture to be out as frequently as you are, explaining this and answering the riddles from parts of our board as well. I appreciate that. Do you think we're well positioned if interest rates decrease in a meaningful way?
Yeah, I mean, if interest rates decrease, I mean, we are relatively short in general because of the nature of interest rates, right? You want to get the most bang for your buck. But I would say that most of the entities that we manage that are similar to you are always, you know, looking at this as it's a bit of an alternative to cash. And it's an alternative to, you know, you're not going out trying to hit a home run and be on the front of a newspaper or a magazine for a good reason, because you could also be there for a bad reason. So I think the duration, the average maturity is right where we would expect an entity like this to be in light of this is cash, and you really, you're looking at it as cash plus versus trying to outperform the market, if that makes sense. I think you're in a good spot.
Thank you.
But I want to thank you also for coming out.
I feel like I haven't been here for a while, but did Ed or somebody come in between when I was here last? That's what I thought.
You were out of town.
I lost track.
Or something,
I was probably traveling somewhere. Sorry about that. But I enjoyed coming to see everybody. So thanks for having me. Yeah.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
You can feel free to skip.
I'll let you finish this part of your evening.
Okay. And now, presentation of the Library of Things collection.
That's over to me. Hello. I do not have the items here, so we have the items set up in tech services. So after I go through all of this and we dismiss this meeting, you guys can go and explore the things. I don't have them here either because I thought it was kind of silly to be like, this is a sewing machine and this is a, you know, tower set, a Jenga set. So a lot of it is self-explanatory, but what I'm going to go over is kind of the general guidelines that we have for the collection in place right now. Location, storage, and checkout procedures, and kind of where we're going to go from here. So the collection will be available for checkout starting April 1st. So we are prepping, getting spaces ready for where the things are going to live, and items are available for holds, and so they'll be available for being put on hold starting April 1st as well. So they are showing in our catalog technically, but they are not holdable. There will be no renewals allowed, and they can be checked out for 1 week at a time. Patrons can place hold on items, and we're restricting it just to Bartlett card holders at the time being. So, and they must be checked out on an adult library card, so not a children's library card. Patrons can only have one item checked out at a time, with the exception of an SD card that we have for the GoPro. They need a special memory card for that, so patrons can check that out simultaneously. And then this collection will have fines of $1 per day, just because it's a new collection, it's in demand. Hopefully it's in demand, and we wanted to make sure to have that in place. So in the new section, when you first walk in, you might have seen that there's some shelving that's empty over there that we've been trying to block out. We're going to be having the collection displayed that's browsable, so that's where patrons will be able to look at what items we have. But the physical items are going to be held in circulation just because a lot of them are expensive items. Some of them are more or less fragile. We don't want people dropping the sewing machine and missing pieces or things like that. So just for consistency, we're keeping all of the physical items behind circulation. And then we will have these two things on display for each item. So this here is like the place card that we will have tacked to the back wall for everyone to see. And then the DVD case will be kind of leaning up against it, and this DVD case is what people will bring to circulation saying this is the item I want to check out, and then circulation will then exchange the item. So on the DVD case we have a picture of the item, what the item is, we have little icons for each of the genres of items, so there's crafting and technology and games, things like that, and then on the back of the item it'll go through everything that's included in each of the kits. So for example, this is the Cricut machine. We have a carrying case, different tools, the spatula, scraper, tweezers, a Cricut pen, cable connections, a grippy mat, a welcome booklet. So people kind of know what they're getting when they are checking out the item. So in theory, when the item is checked out, this will be just sitting there and it'll say this item is currently checked out. But if you're interested in placing the item on hold, there's a QR code that goes to the item record in the catalog, so people can place it on hold right away. I think that's why I went through all of that. So kind of going over like why we decided some of the items we have 13 items to start out with, and that was decided amongst the management team based on just, you know, other evaluations of library things in other libraries and what we thought might be most in demand in an array of different types of items. So we have a car code reader, we have a Cricut machine, we have giant Django, we have cornhole, you'll see it all, but there's a lot of different types of things. In the fall of 2023, we did send out a community survey for suggestions of what people would like to see in the Library of Things. We got a lot of suggestions. I have all the data here kind of organized. Some of the things we already have, like musical instruments, we do have a keyboard piano that people can check out. Binoculars for viewing wildlife, we have binoculars. Some things we already do have in our collection that before the Library of Things, like a microscope or a globe, those are in our hands-on learning collection and new services. So our next step of adding more items would be going through this community survey, as well as evaluating that hands-on learning collection that we have upstairs and figuring out how to merge the two collections to make it kind of one branded item.
Other than the one item that you mentioned as far as the musical instruments, doesn't Youth Services have a bunch of ukuleles that haven't been used for any purpose?
We do have ukuleles upstairs. So for right now, we just wanted to focus on creating a new collection, and then our next step is seeing what we do have and integrating it and working with tech services of changing records and things like that to integrate it into just the whole Library of Things, because they also have anything in that hands-on learning collection as well.
Was there any particular area that community survey showed more interest in as far as types of things?
There is a lot of like technology, so outdoor movie projectors, laminators, movie screen, slide scanner, slide converter, VCR to electronic equipment, which we do have a VCR to DVD converter. One that I was shocked on was woodworking and carpentry tools. So we actually got a lot of things for like woodworking clamps, woodworking tools, carpenter tools, laser levels, screwdriver sets. So it's kind of all over the place. And then food and baking, a lot of people say like the Instapot, stand mixers, cake pans, but we have decided to avoid anything that has to be food related for the current time being. That's just a can of worms we don't really want to open right now.
Mallory, I had a question. When the patrons check something out, I'm sure they're signing for it, and you go over the checklist of what's included, like one of the sewing machines has a lot of integral parts, so when they bring it back, if something's missing, how is the library going to handle if parts are missing?
So Sonia was really great and made a binder for circulation for each of the items in our collection, and it lays out what's in each kit, more or less, and so when an item is returned to circulation, we'll go through that. Patrons will be responsible for replacing the cost of a replacement item.
So in the binder it has images of each of the the item and all of the components that are included in it. It also has different prices for if you just lose, for example, a bobbin from the sewing machine. We're not going to charge you for the full sewing machine. So they can bill patrons right away and get the process moving as soon as possible to get the item back on the shelf for the next patron.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And I think you had said that everything will be brand new. You're not taking donations from someone, is that correct?
Correct.
Is there going to be something wrong with it or pieces missing or whatever?
Correct, yeah. We just want to have, you know, the most up-to-date brand new items and things like that. And we do have, you know, stuff on reserve for if something does break, like a bobbin. We already have bobbins here. It's not like we have to go run out to Joanne's and get a bobbin right on the spot.
Also, will they be signing an insurance waiver or, you know, do not hold responsible if they hurt themselves using this?
So we have that in our collection development policy. That's something that we added a few months back. And we said, you know, part of being a cardholder, you sign and you're responsible for the items that you check out. On the tags that are connected to each of the items, we were going to put a disclosure as well on the back that says, you know, you're responsible for this item. We're not responsible if anything happens, just like a, you know.
So when they sign,
they're not signing
to check anything out. It's just on their card.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I'm just asking, so anybody can come by and say, I'm returning this, and then in one day you could have all these returns. The turnover of going through it to make sure you have everything is going to be within a day. I would think.
We hope so. I mean, it's going to be a learning curve.
No one wants to find out 2 weeks later.
No.
They're getting charged for something.
No. That's going to be something that circulation is managing as their items are being returned. So it's going to be a learning process, though.
Okay.
As we learn how fast it takes to go.
Thank you.
15 items. Yeah. You're not going to get all 15 items in one day. Yeah. Like maybe exactly. Top five or something.
And that's what I mean too. Like we'll see what items are being checked out and what's more popular and what has more holds, and that can help inform, you know, what types of items to continue to add to the collection.
So you may order two of something mm-hmm. just because it's yeah, always
exactly.
out.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I do want to give a shout out to the two staff librarians who really put a lot of research and effort. I know it was Liesl for sure and my
Whitney.
Yeah, Whitney and Liesl were the ones that really did a lot of the legwork. So just a thank you to them.
Mm-hmm. But that's all I have for now. So if you did want to explore the collections back in Tech Services.
You have 2 minutes to do it.
Yeah, 2 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Mallory.
You're welcome.
Yes. Any town hall? Well, we have a roll call for adjournment.
Yes, Trustee Barry.
Yes.
Picaro.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Sias, yes. Olson.
Yes.
Boyer.
Yes.
Daney.
Yes. Again, thank you. Do you have the-